Blog Talk Radio.
And I love the first verse of that. God told Abraham to kill me a son. No, I love that.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
And this is another thing I won't get to on the podcast, but the greatest, like, I think, soliloquy in motion picture business is when, what's the guy's name? The Inequities of Man, or what's the guy's name? The black guy. He says, motherfucker all the time. Or
Denzel Washington?
Not him.
Samuel Jackson?
Yeah, he's a Pulp Fiction.
Samuel Jackson, yep.
And he did The Inequities of Man, or blah, 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 and, you know. He did that verse from the Bible. Oh, it was great. Then he went and chopped the guy, so. What a great movie.
Yes.
Are you a Quentin Tarantino fan?
Yes.
I am, too, sometimes.
I did not like Inglourious Basterds.
Oh, I like that.
I don't know why. I did that one.
And I didn't like some of the shit he did. He did something with John... not Candy. The guy who used to be on the damn Fat Girl show. Goodman. He did something with John Goodman.
Yeah.
That fucking sucked.
I don't remember. I loved Reservoir Dogs. I loved Pulp Fiction.
Reservoir Dogs was good. Pulp Fiction was great.
The vampire one, what is that? Dusk Till Dawn I liked. Yeah, there's a lot of them I liked.
And I still didn't like that one.
Oh,
I mean,
wow.
It was okay. But I liked Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's a good one.
John Goodman was in that one. Okay. Music Highway 61 we visited. And I got all the shit here. I think I got enough. So just, hey, feel free to ask questions. Let's take an hour here and let's fucking roll this thing along. Let me put my timer on so I have some kind of a idea of where we are. Let's roll it. 3, 2. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the University of Dutch, the next edition. My name is Dirty Dutch Mantel, and I'm joined on this episode today by my good friend and the co-host, John Paz. John, how you doing?
I am doing pretty good today, Dirty Dutch.
Well, let's get in the car, close the door. We're going today from, I think we're going to travel from Charlotte to Charleston, South Carolina, and it's a lot of back road, and you can't really fly, not a lot of interstates. But we'll make the trip. Charleston was a good town, a great town, and that's where we're going today. So let's get right. We got a lot to cover today. And I've learned, John, that if I research some of this stuff, I can talk about a lot of stuff. But we're getting in the car. And, of course, the first topic that's going to come up today is the death of Chad Gaspard. I met him one time. I wasn't in WWE when he was there. Did you ever meet him, John?
Yeah, at an autograph signing, actually, probably about a year ago or so.
Yeah, he's a. I never heard anybody say one bad word about this guy or his partner. What was his partner's name? JTG?
JTG of Crime Time, yep.
Yeah, and. But I met him at a signing, and they was at the next table, and I talked to him just a few minutes. Very, very cordial, very nice. But to hear this news. That he was, I guess he lived in California, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out at off Venice Beach. I guess people know just about more than I do because I just know what I've read about it. But, and what is a riptide? What is that? A big tide that comes in and has a suction current underneath? A strong
yes,
one that,
I think
that,
so. Yep.
So it caught him, and I think it caught 10 other people. I guess the lifeguards are all struggling to get as many out of the water as they can. And Chad had his 10-year-old son with him, and he told the guard, he said, take my son and come back for me. But by the time they got back, I guess another riptide had hit him, and they don't know where he went. And this happened, when did this happen, Saturday or Sunday?
Mm-hmm. Sunday, I think it was, yep.
Okay, and they found him Wednesday morning,
yes.
washed up on the beach. So... condolences to the family, condolences to all his fans, a good man, and I hate to see anything happen to anybody like that. And he was a young guy. He was like, what was he, 39, I think?
Yep, exactly, 39.
Well, I hate to see that because he had a long life ahead of him. He was a big guy, wasn't he? He was 6'6", right?
Oh, monsters, dude. I would say 6'6", probably about 300 pounds. He was a monster.
Really? That big? Well, he looked tall to me when I saw him, and I would have said he would be 260. But he's so tall, it's hard. I guess I can make a mistake on a few pounds. But anyway, my condolences to the family, and rest in peace, Mr. Chad. You'll be missed, I'm sure. So let's get on with some more news. What was the thing that Jim Cornette said about Becky Lynch? Now fill me in on this.
Well, basically, he said
he did a tweet first, right?
Well, and then with his show with Brian Lass's podcast, he was talking
he doubled down on it.
Oh yeah, he doubled down for sure. He basically was saying that you're early 30s, you're in the prime of your career, you're supposed to be pushed as one of the top talents in WWE right now. You're making somewhere, there'd be rumored about around $1 million a year, which is just nuts to me, but making around $1 million a year, kind of the headliner. She's been the champ for 399 days or whatever it's been. And he's saying that, why don't you have a pregnancy and have a kid when you're not on top, when you can kind of ride this momentum? Why would you have a kid now? Why wouldn't you wait? And who knows, it might have been an accident. I mean, who knows? I don't think that story is out if they were planning on having a baby right now. But obviously, he kind of said, like, it was a mistake to have it right now. Why not wait and maybe have the baby after your prime is over? Or maybe wait a couple of years till you kind of fizzle down and maybe you're not making $1 million a year. Because obviously, that's going to stop immediately. If you're not working, you're not on the road, you're not being the number one star. So he just basically said she killed her own momentum, and then everyone went crazy on him saying that he's sexist and everything else.
I just want to say one thing about Jimmy. Jimmy can push a button, and people just go nuts. They go, he loves this. And he said, and he probably believes it, but it's the way Jimmy says it anyway, because Jimmy can – you know, he can read the phone book and piss you off. He's just reading it. So taking into account what he says, and I'm thinking, well, does he have a point? Well, he does have a point about maybe they should have, if they plan to have a child, this could be an unplanned pregnancy.
Right.
That's what I'm thinking. With this lockdown and them being, you know, right next to each other 24 hours a day, who knows? But when a baby wants to come, that's God's plan. So if you can't mess with that. So Jimmy has the point. She should have waited, but maybe, you know, maybe she wants to have a baby now.
Yeah,
so if
absolutely.
She wants to have a baby now, that to me is the primary factor. So, and she's probably always wanted to have a child anyway. And women, they get really emotional when the babies thing come in. And but let's say she said she got pregnant, but she didn't want the baby because of her $1 million contract, and then she had an abortion. That would make me really, really not like that girl. You know, that baby didn't have to be born anyway. But to take it and get rid of it just because of that, I think she's doing the right thing, and I commend her for doing that. So, and I'm listening to, I'm not getting into a political discussion here, but you know, I'm not a big fan of abortion, and a woman can do what she wants to do. I just don't want to hear about it. You go do it. Don't tell me. We're fine. But Jimmy says that she, whether she's out or not, she still gets paid. She still gets her downside contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the downside guarantee. Yep.
I guarantee you that's the last contract that WWE will write that for a girl like that, because they will make an exception for a pregnancy. I bet you they just overlooked it this time. I think hard to believe that WWE legal would overlook a woman having a baby when they sign one of these girls. But say she signs for $250,000 downside, let's say, maybe $300,000, which is good money, which is great money.
Oh, yeah.
So she signs for that, and whether she works or not, whether she even shows up to do an interview, anything, she's going to get the $300,000 regardless. Now, at the end, when she's ready to go back to work, say she's got 2 years left on her contract, they will attack on the time she was out. Say it's 12 months, a year. They're going to tack that 12 months onto that other contract, and that's when her other contract will be up. But she's doing really well now. She's making $1 million. Most of that is off the merchandise, I'm sure. So, and I'm glad they're doing good. But Jimmy wasn't the only one who kind of ruffled some feathers talking about Becky Lynch. This girl, Shayna, what's her name? Shayna Baszler?
Mm-hmm. Shayna Baszler, yep.
Did you hear that interview she did?
I got to be honest. I don't know what's going on with her, and I know it's like she's kind of dry and she doesn't really have a lot of charisma, but man, that promo was terrible. Dry is maybe a nice way of saying, but she was terrible.
The promo was terrible? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't think she's a good promo at all.
Well, I don't think it was that good. I think it was worse than that. It was horrible. You know, and this is, and I know she didn't do this. She didn't write this, because this has to be a guy writing this promo for her, because it sounded like something a stupid guy would say, really. A little, what do they call those people who have never, has never been laid?
Virgins?
No, they're not. They're involuntary celibates, incels.
Right.
They've never been laid. That's what I think happened here. I think a lot of those writers, if a woman says something to them, they say they wouldn't know what to do, really, because they're that naive of the world. Some of them are, not all of them, but some of them are. But this, I'm listening to Shayna Baszler, and she's saying, you know, call her, she's stupid, she's a stupid bitch, the kid's going to suck, and you know who the father is. See, that to me sounds like, that doesn't even sound something like a woman would say. Sounds like something a man would say. But regardless of who wrote it, it was delivered terrible. And, you know, Shayna Baszler, how was she in MMA? She was good or no?
Pretty good, yeah. Not like a crazy amazing record, but she was pretty good. I mean, a lot more wins than losses, but I wouldn't say the best, but definitely nowhere near the worst. She was pretty good. I would say kind of like upper mid-card if you were like kind of rating her.
Yeah. Well, she has no personality.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I think you can teach somebody to do an interview. I think you can kind of, it's just a little bit of acting, but to have a personality with it, you can't teach it. It's almost they either can or they can't. AJ Styles used to have that problem. He could do an interview, but he had no personality. Now he's opened up, and now he smiles a little bit. He has a lot more personality, and you kind of like AJ. Plus, he's such a tremendous talent. You got to like him. But anyway, I was listening to the interview by Miss Baszler on Becky Lynch, and I was saying I was amazed that they even allowed that to air.
Yeah, that seemed kind of like odd timing, and like it was like, okay, that's weird. You know, she's crying, she's pregnant, she's happy, and then they kind of cut to Baszler. I know she's being a heel, but it just seemed like odd, like the placement of it was weird.
How old is Becky? 33, I heard.
Yes, Becky Lynch, 33. Yep.
Well, she's getting up there, and there's, you know, she's still in the range of, you know, I guess a woman can still have a child up to she's about 40, and
right.
a lot of women in business. They do delay having kids to later on. They get established in their career, and you know. But Becky, to me, it was kind of odd that she's at the top of her game right now. And I mean, she can come back, but there's an old saying. An old wrestler told me one time. He says, "Never take yourself out of the game."
Right. Yep.
Makes sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because as many people. He wants that position. And when she comes back, it may not be. And you know what we're not really thinking about right now? Vince, he says, he gives his full blessings. That's what they say.
That is famous last words for her, I think.
Yes, I think, oh, you'll be a great mother, and Seth, you'll be a great dad, and blah, 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 blah. But then we float on a year's time. Vince may think totally different about it. And then they may even have put somebody in the spot. And, yeah, they can bring her back a time or two. But that, to me, when they bring her back, is the most crucial time of her time at WWE. It's when she's coming back.
Do you think maybe...
It's even more crucial than when she started. It's when she takes time off and comes back.
Yes.
What's the question?
I was going to say, do you think at all maybe Vince is kind of happy because the ratings have been down ever since this kind of woman's evolution thing kind of started? I mean, everything has been trending down. They've been losing fans left and right. They've been losing, like, so many things left and right. Yeah, I mean, it sounds great, and it looks great, woman's revolution and evolution, whatever you want to call it, and all this other stuff. But it hasn't been good for them as far as, like, eyeballs and watching them.
No. You can't watch it. I mean, I can't watch it. I mean, it was hard for me to watch it when they had people. Now you take it out, it looks like two guys in a garage. And you don't hear any sounds but them hollering at each other and, you know, and them hitting the mat or whatever they're doing. It's hard to watch it. And I do think a toll is being taken. Let me ask you that. Have you seen a picture of Vince lately?
Yeah. Oof, man, he does not look good.
He looks like hell. You know, Vince always looks pretty good and fairly tan. He doesn't look good. The picture was bad, but
mm-hmm.
he looks like he's, I swear, he looks like he's aged. Vince is how old? 73
or 74, somewhere around there. Yep.
He looks like he's aged at least. He looks like he's at least 80. I mean, if you can draw a distinction between 70 and 80, but he looks like, you know, when a president starts his term and how they look, then they come back 4 years later and how they look then, they look all just, they got gray hair and lines in their faces, and they look just stressed out. That's what
yes.
Vince looks like to me right now, stressed out.
Yeah, he does not look like the Vince of old, that is for sure.
And I think with this coronavirus thing we're going through right now, everybody's locked down. Now, things are opening up a little bit now.
Yes.
But now they're saying, well, it's going to be worse now because now the people are going to be getting out. I don't know. This is what I think. One guy, he did an interview on TV. Now, this is just me and you, John, talking, going down the road. He said, I don't care if I catch it. It's better that I catch it than my business. He said, I spent 25 years building this business. If I'm not there, I won't even be in business.
Right. Makes sense.
So it's life or death for that guy, no matter which way he goes. But the economy of it is, it makes sense both ways. If he catches the coronavirus, yeah, he may die. Stays in lockdown and his business goes under, well, he's lost everything. So he made sense. I understood him completely what he was saying. He said, I don't give a shit about the government. I don't give anything. He said, I'm opening my business back up. I'm going back to work. They can't put everybody in jail. They really can't. So, and I don't know about this coronavirus thing. It's about, hell, no more than what I'm doing right now, which is very little. You know, we're all cooped up. But you're still working, right, John?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So you're going out every day.
Yes.
So you wear the mask?
Yes, got to wear the mask, yep.
Okay.
You have to.
Well, anyway, what Cornette said, I kind of agree with it a little bit. And then again, I don't agree with it. But put that into perspective, it's a woman's body, and she can do what she wants with it, I guess.
Do you think that people went crazy because it was him saying it, that if it was somebody else saying it, they wouldn't have went crazy?
No, I think he's got a pretty big following anyway. People like to pick on Jim because they think he's like your damn crazy-ass uncle. And every family has one, right, John?
Yeah.
Crazy-ass uncle.
Yes.
And you're having a big birthday party or Thanksgiving, you know, Oh, is Uncle John coming? Yes. Oh, God. Why did you invite him? You know what it's going to be like. I know, but, you know, he's my brother, and I got to invite him, you know, for family, keep the family together. And you say, well, yeah, but Mom, you know, he has a couple of drinks, and all of a sudden he's going to start coming out with all this gay talk and all this LGBTQ stuff. It's just going to be, it's going to just be a big argument. That's the way Jimmy is. Didn't Jimmy one time have he had a woman co-host? And they had
Was it Alice Radley? Was that her name?
Something. And what was that about?
Yeah, I don't remember.
I think it was something about Muslims. And he said something, he didn't like them or something. And she got all upset. And I heard part of it. I may have it all wrong, but it was something like that. And she took, what's that word, umbrage with it, I guess.
Yep.
And I guess that was her last show she ever did with Jimmy. You know, Jimmy, you just, whatever Jimmy says, unless you're really prepared to fight with words, I'd just be ready just to shut up. Because Jimmy, you're not gonna beat him. You're not gonna beat him in the words. You know, he is probably. This is a story about Jimmy. I worked in Smoky Mountain for a while, and Jimmy would get so stressed out sometimes. And oh, he'd just throw stuff and holler and God damn it, this and what the fuck and. Excuse my language, but I told him one day, I went in the back, and he was mad at something. And you know the guy that pulls the cable for the camera?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He had done something to piss Jimmy off, and Jimmy had him by the throat up against the wall and telling him, I'm going to beat the living. I said, Jimmy, stop, please, please let the guy go. And I stepped between him and the guy, and I told the guy, I said, let's go on. And I said, Jimmy, calm down, man. You're gonna have a friggin' heart attack. I know. I just get so worked up. And then all he needed was an intermediary to step in between him and the guy, and he was fine. But when he had the guy up against, I don't know what the guy had done. He just pissed Jimmy off, and Jimmy just lost it and took off on him. I've seen a lot of that shit in dress rooms. I've seen a lot of fights. I've seen a lot of things. What else was I going to talk about today? Talk about.
Well, there was something else that. Cornette,
you had a
said.
Question you wanted to ask me about the Cornette thing.
Well, there was another thing that Cornette said. I know we were talking previously. You thought it was Alexa Bliss, but it was not Alexa Bliss. It was Dana Brooke who he had something to say.
He did.
Alexa Bliss, it would be impossible to say that about. But Dana Brooke, yes, he did say. I guess she had some Botox done or something. Yeah.
But he said it about her lips, right?
And I think her cheeks or something. He was basically saying, like, Botox injection. She doesn't look the same. She's not pretty anymore.
Oh, my God. And, you know, ladies, females, when you get to their looks, and those girls, they really look good. They really do.
Yeah.
When you get to anything negative, because they're competing with all those other girls, plus they're females, you say anything about their looks, and they're going off. And she called him a mark and get in my face and say that. And I would like to see that. But
them go one-on-one?
Let me tell you, let me talk about, well, yeah, but Jimmy, one thing about Jimmy, you know, I don't know how you do against a woman, but, you know, a lot of people think Jimmy won't fight. Jimmy will fight you like a son of a gun.
He's got a great right hand.
Well, you know, when you watch Jimmy, the way Jimmy broke in, you know, I gave you that question last week or 2 weeks ago. Who was the first person he ever managed? Did I give you that?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And what was the answer? Do you remember?
No, I don't even remember who the first. Oh, it was a woman, wasn't it? Sherry Martel. Sherry Martel. Yes, that's right.
But when you watch Jimmy, you know, I knew Jimmy when he was, I guess, 13, 14, 15 years old. Because his mother, he's from Louisville, of course, and his mother worked at the matches for Teeny Jarrett, which was Jerry Jarrett's mother. She actually promoted the town. And Jimmy's mother got in with her somehow, and she just helped her with the promotion. Jimmy, being such a huge wrestling fan, he thought this was the greatest thing in the world because he got to come down and he could see the matches, and he could hang around ringside, and he could get close to it. And then he worked his way inside in the locker room, and he began taking pictures for all the guys, for the gimmick tables, for the souvenir and the merchandise tables. So that's how he kind of knew all these guys, especially like the special guys they would bring in, like the Funk and Austin Idol, and, you know, whoever they brought in, Jimmy would go and take their picture. That's how he got to know them. But Jimmy has, if you watch him when he's very, he's never been very athletic, but he was such a heat magnet. Those people hated Jimmy. Hell, I hated Jimmy after that. But he had a connection with those people. And sometimes some of his matches very, very entertaining. They're different. I saw a match between him and Jimmy Hart. You couldn't reproduce it. It was great. It was in Lexington, Kentucky. But yeah, it wasn't long, about 5 or 6 minutes. What a great match between these two. And I had a match, a three-way, with Jimmy Hart, Jimmy Cornette, and me. We all had a three-way in Lexington. And very good match. Because you know, neither one of those guys was experienced. But all they did is they just played off the heat they had with the people, and it worked. So, you know, we could talk all day about Jim Cornette because, and he did. He did put up, he said he's got 125,000 followers on his Twitter page, I think. I know on his podcast.
His YouTube, yeah. Subscribers on his YouTube.
Oh,
yep.
YouTube, that's what it
yep.
is. That's a lot of subscribers, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, he's got a great fan base.
Well, they love Jimmy. And Jimmy, he can cuss them out. He can tell them anything he wants to do. And they'll just say, oh, well, that's just Uncle Jimmy. That's just the way he is. Let's go on. Because if he acted any other way, that would be Jim Cornette.
How's your relationship with him?
Oh, great. I've always loved Jimmy. See, I broke Jimmy in. When Jimmy was taking the pictures, I was always, most of the guys were really always nice to Jimmy anyway. But Jimmy, when he would come and talk, and I would talk to him, and, you know, and he never forgot that because I didn't treat him like a lowly photographer. I treated him like a human being, and I talked to him like I would talk to you. And he never forgot that. Nothing worse is trying to get into something and somebody's trying to, like, make you feel less than what you are. Because I always treated him well. And I used to make a few trips with Jimmy. When he first started, they put him with me. So I remember one day we were riding back to Nashville from Memphis. It's about a 3-hour trip. It's on interstate, straight interstate, Interstate 40. So, and I had been up all night the night before Friday night. So we leave the TV, I guess. TV's over at, I think the TV's over at 1, I think. 11:30 to 1, I think it went. So we left about 1:30. So we get, you know, past Jackson, which is another hour. And the sun is coming through the windshield. I get sleepy. I said, Jimmy, you mind if I take a little nap? He said, no, take a nap. So I take the nap. I lay the seat back. So probably 40 minutes, 45 minutes, I wake up, but I don't raise up, and I just look over at Jimmy. Jimmy is busily engaged in something. He's got his hands on that 2-4 position, and wherever he wasn't in that car. He was like in the Bahamas or someplace. He was anywhere but in that car, and he was really seriously thinking about something, and all of a sudden I went, wow, I just screamed. Oh my God! You ever see that scene in Planes, Trains, and Automobiles with John Candy?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he almost had that accident. I swear to God, he went into the grassy area in the middle, then back on, then back in it. We're going down a hill to a bridge, and it was spanning a river. And if we just stayed in that grass, he couldn't straighten it out. We went right off into that river. So I told myself right then, I will never, ever scare Jimmy Cornette while he's driving a car again. And instead of scaring him, it scared me. It scared both of us. So I said, I'll never do it again and never have. So, but I've got some, you wanted to talk about a little bit about Andy Kaufman.
Yes, because technically anniversary of his death was May 16th, a couple of days ago. So that kind of was on my mind just from that.
Well, today he would have probably been, I guess, 70. Or May 16th was this, was the day. January 17th, I think, when he was born. But I think he would be like 70 years old.
No, I think he'd be, I think he'd be like 61, something like that, because he was born in 59. So I think he would be 61.
Born in 49, I think.
Oh, I mean, I got to double check that.
I think he was born in 49. I'm pretty sure. Check Google real quick.
Oh, you are right. You'd be 71. Yes, you're right.
See, see, research, man. It helps you. But he was born in 49. I remember that. And he was a young man when he died. He was like 33, 34.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But, and I don't know if I've ever told the story, but I remember when Lawler was going to bring him in. He was a huge, huge wrestling fan. And, you know, he tried to get in with the WWWF before. And the old man, Vince Sr., told him, get out of here, you know, it'll make us a joke. People laugh at us and nobody will take it serious. So he got put down. So a photographer, I think his name was Bill Apter.
Yep.
He did the mags. I think he knew Kaufman, I guess, from the garden, I guess, where they first met.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew Andy wanted to get into the business. So Apter was always a fan of Memphis, and he said, why don't you call Jerry Lawler, Jerry Jarrett, down in Memphis? So he called him, and I guess they made a deal that they was going to do something with him. And I remember going to Louisville one day, and Lawler looked over at me and said, hey, do you know who Andy Kaufman is? I said, yeah, because he had the taxi show on. And I'd seen him a few times on Late Night with Johnny Carson. Very unfunny comedian, by the way, if you've ever seen him. He was different.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, yeah, I know who he is. He said, well, I'm going to bring him in and see what happens. So I had the heads up on it. And I will say this right here. I watched that whole angle from beginning to end and became such a fan of it that you couldn't have tied me down and told me the finish of what they wanted to do, because I didn't want to know it. I wanted to watch it just like a fan would watch it. And it's almost when you watch something and you're interested in it. And see, I've never really been a really strong wrestling fan per se. I was a fan of the work. But to not know what is going to happen and then it happens, and actually being a fan's pretty good, because Lawler, this angle, and they didn't wrestle every week, of course, because they would have burned it out. But I guess it lasted 3 months, 2 or 3 months. But it was just a thing of beauty to watch. I remember the night that Kaufman was going to wrestle Foxy, the black lady, and that's when he was offering the $1,000 to any woman who could beat him. I remember that night, and that's when Lawler finally stepped in the ring. Kaufman beat her, but, you know, she took him down a couple of times, and the crowd just roared. Memphis literally hated the whole territory. They literally hated Kaufman. Just hated him. Because he came in there and he'd do that southern draw, and he said, well, love for me for Tennessee.
Soap, yep.
Yeah, and as you listen to him, you know, it's funny, but he makes you mad. I mean, he didn't make me mad because I thought it was funny, but some of the guys, like Dream Machine, he's from Memphis. And he heard the interview one day at the TV station, and it was a tape, of course, but he got mad. Man, he shouldn't talk. He said he shouldn't talk about Memphis that way, man. He shouldn't do that. But Kaufman, he knew the exact buttons to push. I mean, anytime you push an ethnic issue, like a Southerner being stupid or something, you know, that's, I mean, Southerners are used to it anyway, but still pisses them off. So when he said, oh, I'm up from Memphis, Tennessee, and who are he? So when you hear it, he just did a great job with it. And I remember he had that same interview. He had some fat woman standing there, some fat girl, and he said, and I'm going to demonstrate how I'm going to beat that Foxy person or whatever. Come here. What's your name? Sharon. Sharon, you ever wrestled before? A little bit. Okay, I'm going to show you that. And they locked up. He took her down. Of course, he just abused the hell out of her and jumped back on her again. And Bob Zamuda had to come in. He was his manager. And
yep.
pull him off. Now, you know Bob Zamuda, correct?
Yes. Yep.
He said you interviewed him one time. He talked how long without
stopping? Oh, my God. He holds the world record 22 straight minutes. He was literally talking about Memphis wrestling for 22 straight minutes.
Really? Well, this is what I hate about making the Man of the Moon movie, because for years and years and years and years, that Lawler and Kaufman was a shoot. You know that?
Yep.
Because this is an old saying I got. People will believe, you know, in normal circumstances, people will believe sometimes till you give them a reason to disbelieve. So when you come out and tell them, yeah, we had all this planned. Because when he got on call on Letterman, Letterman sold it because he didn't know it was coming. And then who's that guy, Ted, what's that little kid that was on taxi with him that got mad at Lawler? He told Andy, he's a little Hispanic guy, I can't remember his name now. But anyway, he told Andy, he says, I thought he hurt you. He said, I was going to go to Memphis, I was going to beat him up. And that was one of the other co-stars on the show. And let me tell you how they hated Kaufman. You know, when Lawler put him on his head twice, suplexed him back, and left him laying, they all left the ring and they left Andy laying in the ring. He didn't move. And Andy laid there probably a minute or so before somebody went to see about him. People thought he was really hurt. Then they took their time. They called the ambulance. The ambulance came. They rolled the gurney right up to the ring, put him on that, you know, that flat back stretcher, and put him on the gurney, and it was rolling him out. The people, they were so mad at Andy, they were throwing things down from the second balcony and trying to hit him with it. And he was, they had a big neck brace on him, and it made big news in Memphis. It made, and actually, I think that one event right there, and what year was that, 82?
Yes, 1982.
And I'll tell you a little more about 82 in just a second about Memphis. But 82, that was when wrestling got that push. I think WWE was still WWF, but, I mean, they were starting to roll. Then all of a sudden, they get this big news out of Memphis, Tennessee, and you see that sellout crowd, and you see Andy Kaufman being carted out. And the news media, they hop on that like it's the second coming almost. They did call the Kaufman, Lawler, you know, the suplex match they had, one of the top, oh, no, the Letterman slap, they called that one of the top 50 moments in TV history. Did you know that?
Yeah, and I totally, I'm 100% in on that.
And nobody, but everybody popped to that when he slapped him. But 1982 was the best year ever in Memphis wrestling history, because I think that year they sold something like 400,000 tickets. Now, Memphis was a city, people, metro area, I guess. They sold more tickets in Memphis than they sold in New York City. New York City only ran like once every month or every 6 weeks or so. I think they sold, like, say they ran 10 times. They only did like maybe 12 times. They only did something like 200,000 people. Memphis doubled them. Hard to believe, isn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
But that's what it did. But anyway, Andy Kaufman, he would sit in the dressing room, and he would, and he's not funny. I may have talked about it. Have I talked about this before?
No.
Well, he would sit in the dressing room, and he would just, almost like a kid that made it to the varsity football team. He'd look around like, I can't believe I'm here. And we were looking at him like, not like, I can't believe you're here, but how did you get here? Tell you the truth. That's what we were. And he was very nice, and he was always approachable. never acted like he was better than anybody else. Actually, he acted very, very humble and gracious. And because he was such a fan of wrestling. And I talked to him several times, but never in depth and at length. But I told him one time I called him a comedian. And he corrected me right away, and he said, "No, Dutch, I'm not a comedian." It was almost like, "Don't call me a comedian."
Mm-hmm.
He said, "I am not a comedian." He said, "I'm a sketch artist." And I looked at him like, "Damn, idiot." And I said, "Well, what's that mean?" He said, "Well, that means I work to elicit a response." He said, "Whether it's good, bad, indifferent, doesn't matter. As long as I get a response, I've done what I intended to do." And you see, Andy going out in a big coliseum like Memphis, a 12,000-seater, and see all those seats filled, what a rush it had to be to him. Because he was used to working comedy clubs, 100-seat comedy clubs, 150-seat comedy clubs. So when he can go out and have 12,000 people feeding off his every move, what a rush that had to be for him. So the night he wrestled Foxy, I look in the ring, and he goes, that was a live, Memphis was a lively crowd anyway. They're on his ass. They're cussing him, calling him everything under the sun. So I look in the ring, and I see 100 and maybe 160-pound, maybe 150-pound guy with greasy dark hair and a white pimply face. And he had on like long white long johns that you would buy at Kmart, and a pair of little black like gym shorts. And of course, he'd have tennis shoes on. And he was floating around the ring, and I'm thinking, you know, that's the most unlikely candidate of all time to headline and main event a show anywhere. And then I thought to myself, well, the only thing that qualified him is he sold 12,330 tickets. He earned the right to be in the main event. So,
yeah. Yep.
But it got a lot of news, and I didn't know it at the time. This didn't dawn on me to, I don't know, maybe a year or two or more after his death, that when Andy was in Memphis, he already had cancer. I think that's why he probably looked so white, and probably why he looked so thin. And he could have been in pain then, but you would never know it, because he went out there and he busted his ass. I told Lala one time, I said, "So you suplexed the guy with cancer?" He said, "Oh, don't start that. I'm sure he's heard that before. But Andy, and then I think he tried to do that holistic medicine stuff, didn't he?
Yes.
He went to Mexico and he went through all that stuff. I guess none of it worked. And I think he died in 84, correct? May 16th, 1984?
Yes.
Well, he died about 2 years after he was in Memphis, so. But he was a good guy. He always treated me well. He's always nice to everybody. And he wouldn't ever come around when the guys would get together, especially on Friday night. They would run like a smaller town around Memphis. But that would just put the guys in the Memphis area because they had to do TV early the next morning. See, Andy never really went to any of the parties or anything. He wasn't a party guy. He'd just go to his room, and he might stop by for 15, 10, 15 minutes, and he was gone. So, anyway, I think Memphis made a big big discovery when they had him in Memphis. And Lawler told me this story. This is when I was in the WWE not too long ago, maybe 2000. I think he told me 2014. We were going somewhere, or we're sitting somewhere, and we got to talking about Kaufman. And he told me, he said, "You know, I flew over here from such and such a town, say from Cleveland to Detroit." And he flew on the company plane. And he says, "Nobody wanted to really sit next to Vince because then he'd have your attention, then he'd notice you." So, well, it says the only seat open when he got on was the seat beside Vince. So he had to sit down. Of course, when you sit down beside Vince, you know, he'll want to talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he told Lawler, he said, "You know, you son of a bitch." He said, if you hadn't have got Kaufman, if I did, he said, I'd have made him the biggest goddamn star in wrestling business. He said, and then he didn't act like he was mad, but he was telling Mahler, the good thing you got him, because he said I was, and he said his dad didn't want him, but Vince Jr. wanted him. Because that would have been right down Vince Jr.'s avenue.
Yes.
He'd been right in his wheelhouse to take him and make him a big star. Be, you know, and he's a big star now, but he would have been a much, much, much bigger star had he made it with in 1983 with Hulk Hogan and all those guys and Roddy Piper and all of them. He'd have been a huge, huge hit then, bigger than he was. Hey, I got I got a note here. One of the worst movies I ever saw had Andy Kaufman in it, and you may have seen it. It's called Heartbeats. You ever see it?
No, I never seen it.
It's with what's that girl's name? I don't remember her name now. But it's the worst movie you'd ever want to see in your life. It didn't make a damn bit of sense. It was like Kaufman was a robot, and this girl, she was a robot too, and they fell in love. It was just sucked. It was just it was the shit. And here's another movie not to see. I'm just giving you warning. It's called Arkansas. Don't see it. Watching the movie is actually worse than riding through Arkansas. You'll say, what the hell? But it's a terrible movie. And hey, since I've been cooped up, I've watched a lot of movies, so I'm going to give my critiques on some movies, if they're bad. Hey, I've got some questions I want to ask by the fans. One guy writes me, his name is, I don't know, that's his name. He said, who were some of the commentators that you really like to have call your matches? Well, you know, you only have about, you know, in the era that I came along, you only had a couple. And but I was always partial to Lance Russell. Because if you listen to Lance, he's smooth, and he doesn't call everything that happens. He'll call something, and then he'll lay out. And then he'll let you concentrate on what he said or what's going on. And that's what always made Lance's commentary so special to me. Because he didn't try to tell you, he didn't try to tell you everything. He actually gave you credit as a fan to figure it out for yourself. Very smooth. If you had a story for Lance to tell, if you just tell him what the story is, he would work that story into his commentary slowly. He wouldn't tell you the story right off the bat. But throughout the match, he'll tell you this and this and this. I had a match with Lawler one time. It was, that 26 fall match that Lawler and me had against Dundee and Landale. I told Lance, this is what we're going to do. We're going to be losing a lot of falls at the end. So, and I let them pin me almost willingly, like for the last three falls. I lost the last three falls on my team. But what I was doing, and I told him, and it made sense. He said, you know, when you lose a fall, you know, they count you down. Then you get 30 seconds. Then you lose another fall, you get 30 seconds. So you had 30 seconds to kind of recover and get some of your wind back or your energy back. And so, and Lance just worked that in so perfectly. You know, he made it seem like, well, there's a plan to all this. So, I like Lance. I like JR. I mean, who couldn't like JR? Because he puts a lot of energy in it. He kind of gets with the match, and he's got that Oklahoma accent, which adds to it, I think. So, and Gordon Soley liked him. He was a little dry for me, but I liked him. Bob Caudle.
Yep.
Very, very, very good. Very good. And then, of course, Tony Schiavone. Now, two of those, JR and Tony, they're with AEW, right?
Yes, you are correct.
So, you know, what I was talking about the girls a while ago, I can spread this out, and I meant to bring this up earlier. You know, that entire WWE roster, you know, I was only there like, I don't know, 4 years ago. I was there in 2000, or 4 years ago. I bet 70% of that roster I don't even know. I mean, I don't even know them. I think we talked about this, too. They all look the same to me. This is what WWE's problem is for me. Now, you may see it differently. They don't really have a star. Do you think they do?
No. They're lacking big time.
They don't have a John Cena. They don't have a Randy Orton. Even though Randy Orton is there, they don't have a Randy Orton in the same status they had him before. And they don't have, of course, they don't have a Stone Cold. They don't have a Rock. I mean, those were the stars. They don't have they have an Undertaker, but they don't have an Undertaker. You know what I mean? It's like,
yes, yep.
But they don't really have the star, and I don't see any stars on the girls' side either. I think Charlotte Flair is great in the ring, but I don't. To me, she didn't push those buttons. I don't think people will buy a pay-per-view or go see a show on a regular basis just based on her. Now, I may be wrong. It's my own personal opinion. Do you see it that way?
100%. Totally agree.
I mean, you know, when The Rock was there, you go see The Rock. That's it. He's your star. You had Stone Cold there, you go see Stone Cold. He's the star. Undertaker, he's the star. Cena, he's the star. But now you say, oh, you want to go to the WWE show? Who's there? Well, so-and-so's there. Well, who's that? Well, okay, so-and-so's there. Well, who's that? They don't even know him. Now, this is what I think, too, since I'm off on this friggin' tangent. These writers, I think they're the main causes. I don't think it's your talent that much. I think it is your writers, because the writers don't have a clue what they're doing. See, Vince always wanted to have writers with previous experience writing for a legitimate publication. I had a writer one time. I said, hey, what did you work for? He said, I work for the, name a town in New York, a good size town, Poughkeepsie,
New York.
Poughkeepsie Daily News Times Journal. I mean, I said, you know, I don't know his name. I can't remember his name. They changed much anyway. I said, I don't want to be disrespectful, but a writer, a beat writer for the Poughkeepsie Journal, Daily News Journal, does not a wrestling writer make. See, you're not reporting facts. You're making up a story. These guys, they're not writers in the fictional sense. They're writers in nonfiction. They can put facts and dates and times and names and addresses and arrest warrants and what you were arrested for in the circuit court and the bail. They can do all that stuff, but that's cut and dried. The police, they hand them a sheet of paper. It's all on there. All they got to do is copy it off and repeat it. But if they're trying to start a story from go to woe, that's what makes professional wrestling what it is. That's why mixing in the MMA people with it, I think, is kind of, you're kind of beating yourself before it even starts. And see, the writer, a wrestling writer, I may say a lot of these things twice, but you probably heard them before. But when a territory, and we call them territories, we used to call them territories. We don't have that anymore. But when we did, when we had territories, it was man. And say, that Dutch and John, they're over there in Memphis burning it down. Okay? But when it goes down, you know who gets the heat? Not us, but the booker. Whoever the booker is. They say, boy, that Jerry Lawler, he's terrible. He couldn't book nothing. See, we don't get the heat. The talent got all the glory when it was doing well. But when it went down, you know, the writers get all the heat. See, being a writer is really a thankless job anyway. Terrible job. Let me ask you another one. I'm going to read another question here. Which angles are some of your favorite angles that you booked or were an agent for? I'm noted for a couple of angles. One of them was the loser angle. You remember the Jack Hart angle they used to have? You couldn't win a match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I started that with him in Florida. He came to Florida, and this is how it works. You put him out there, you do an interview with him, like he's going to be a big star, and then he goes in there and he gets beat. well, you don't expect that. So he had the interview up front. He goes out, tells how great he is, and how he's such a great amateur. He did this, and how he's going to beat everybody in Florida and be the champion. And then the second week, it's the same thing. Well, you know, last week, you know, and you put him against the same guy, and the guy beats him again. Now you got the pattern going. It takes a little time. And about the third week, the people kind of catch on that he can't win a match. You put him against another guy, he gets beat right in the middle. So what you're doing with this guy, you're getting him over in reverse, and it works. Because after you get him over, you can do anything with him then. And then I finally did end up working an angle with Percy Pringle. He was Percy Pringle then. Paul Bearer. And did big business. He was like a first match guy. Percy Pringle was just the manager. And the people, they wanted to come see Percy get beat. And they thought Jack, he could beat Percy. He might not beat, he said, I may not beat anybody else east of the Mississippi, but I damn sure can beat Percy Pringle. And people responded to it. So it got him over, and he was a baby face then. And it got him over. What you just got to be careful of is if you let him win too early, actually, by letting him win, you kill him. Instead of getting him beat, it kills him. If you let him win, it kills him. So you kind of got to watch that. But that was one of my favorite angles I ever did. I did it everywhere. I did it in Puerto Rico. It worked everywhere I went because it just works in reverse. And nobody else ever had the idea, and I came up with it. And you know where I got that idea?
Mm-hmm.
I was in Florida here, and I was watching the Tampa Bay Bucks when they first started and joined the NFL. They could not win a game to save their ass. I went to about, I don't know, four or five games because the stadium was only about, I don't know, a mile and a half from where I was living at the time. I saw the New York Giants. They were playing the New York Giants. Not only didn't I see them win, I didn't even see them score. I didn't even see them kick a field goal in five games that I went to. And they went 0-1, I think it was 0-1. They play a 16-game schedule now. I think they played a 12-game schedule then. But they didn't win a game. They went 0-12. So I saw them one time. They got down on the one-yard line of the New York Giants. And three plays later, they were back on their own 49. So when they got down to the one, people all stood up. The loser, this team has never scored. And all of a sudden he gets thrown for a loss. And then he goes back to pass and they sack him. Then the third time he goes back, he fumbles. The ball is rolling and they cover it. They recover it, but it's back on their own 49. So instead of first and goal from the one, it was like fourth and goal from the 49, their own 49-yard line. The damnedest thing. I'm going to see if I can look it up and see if I can find it on YouTube. That's got to be somewhere. But that was one of my favorite angles is the loser angle. So I did it with Jack Hart. And what was his name? What was his name in WWE?
Barry Horowitz.
Barry Horowitz. And they heard about the angle, and they took it up there, and they did it with him. Not to the same degree, but that's what they – and they liked the angle.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to manage. And another thing I always like, I love working. I started the knockout division in TNA, and that's a whole show unto itself.
Right.
But I really like working with those girls because when I first wanted to bring them in, I was met with such opposition to it. And Jeff Jarrett, he didn't like the girls much. Even Vince Russo, you know, all the things, the bra and panties on the pole and all that he's noted for, he didn't even like it. And Dixie Carter, oh, she hated it because now she's got more females she has to compete with. She didn't want that. So they kept on, no, I don't think we can find enough girls. And then I said, you mean you got to be shitting me? So what we were doing, we were trying to book a pay-per-view for somewhere in New York. And they said, I don't think we've got enough girls. You think we can find enough girls? I said, well, there's 300 million people in the U.S. 150 of them millions are probably women. So, yeah, I think we could find 12 somewhere. We've got to train them ourselves. And so I started with Gail Kim, and she's a tremendous talent, Gail is. And I told her we were going to finally got a girls' division installed, and she was ecstatic. And I said, do you have any suggestions? She says, call him, Awesome Kong. I'll have her call you. I said, have her call me. Then she gave me a tape of her working. I forgot this girl's name. In Japan, God, what a match they had. It's better than the guys. Because Kong works like a guy anyway. But I went into the ring with him. I forgot he was trying to show her some moves. I said, don't show her anything. All I want her to know right now is a spinning back fist and a sitting powerbomb. That's all she needs to know. And she got over. But those are some of my favorite angles I've worked with because it's so easy to work with. And if you get the girls, of course, the girls were fully invested. The first meeting I ever had with the TNA Knockouts, I told them, I said, girls, you are no longer bitches and whores and sluts and cunts. Excuse my language. But I said, you're athletes now. And I said, and this is when I got over them. I said, I want you to go out there. And I said, I want you to put some numbers up, and I want you to beat the shit out of these guys. And they applauded me. And I told them, I said, I'm on your side, so let's go to work. And they went to work. And the one thing about the girls I've always found out, you know, you always hear that the girls are catty and backstabbing. That first group I had, they were never like that. They were always working to advance the group as a whole. I mean, when one girl had a good match, when she came back, all the other girls would meet her and pat her on the back and hug her, you did great. And that's what I wanted to see. Now, later on, it changed. Of course, that's the nature of the wrestling business and the nature of life, I guess. But those girls were so, so easy to. And I got her over. I called it the Abdul the Butcher theory. She didn't go off her feet for the first 3 months. Like he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he
yep.
And I always put like a little perky little blue-eyed blonde little girl in there. Looked like a little cheerleader. And Khan just beat shit out of them. I mean, literally beat them up. I mean, not hurt them, but just manhandle them. And the people said, damn it, girl don't have a chance. So, but when the girl did make a little bit of a comeback, the crowd would get behind her. And Kong would act like one time, like she's going to fall, but she never would. But all, if she never took the bump, now, I mean, the roof would have come off after about a month because they never seen her off her feet. But those were some of my angles that I worked on that I really, really like. To do. And here's my last one. I think this is from, I don't know who this guy is from. Andrew something, I think. But he said, he wanted to know, my question is your opinion on Teddy Hart.
Oh, well, Matthew Alexander, his name.
Yeah, I don't know Teddy Hart that well. But I will tell a story that a lot of people don't know. When TNA first started, they ran their Wednesday night pay-per-views out of the Nashville Fairgrounds. You know, the Nashville Fairgrounds was a kind of a, it seen its better days. But if they had spent just a little bit of money on the fairgrounds, they could have turned it into a real dump. That's how bad it. That's how bad it was. But we used to go have. They used to have a restaurant at the bottom of the hill, and no more than couple hundred feet from where the main building was that we ran in. And you know the name of the name of the restaurant? White Trash Cafe.
Wow.
That was, and we went down there, of course, you know, they would cater for us, and the food was good. But I remember one day I went down there, and I was coming back up the building. Somebody said, did you hear about Teddy Hart and CM Punk? I said, no. He said, they got in a fight. I said, about what? They said, we don't know. But he said, Teddy Hart beat the crap out of him. And I went, what? I didn't say, I don't know if he did or not. That's just what I heard. But I think they got in some argument. You know, CM Punk's a little bit, he's a little bit on edge most of the time. And you know how Teddy is. And I think Teddy was pretty rambunctious in the time, at the time. So that's what they said. I didn't see the fight, so I don't know. One more question, and I'm going to go. This is by Chuck Ash again. In the territory days, when did wrestlers practice, if ever? He was always on the road, and time was tight between dates. And would there be any time for someone to learn a new move or transition into a new hold? Well, first of all, we never practiced, not that I remember. Because let's say this, You're going to Memphis from Nashville. You got to leave by 2 o'clock because you had to do interviews at 6. You leave at 2, and before that, you got to go work out at the gym, and then you get in the car about 2:30, drive to Memphis, do the show, you leave about 10:30 at night, 3 hours back, 3 and a half. You get back at 2 o'clock. Well, what do you think? Where's the time in there to work out in the rain? No time. There's no time. Actually, how I learned this business basically was in front of people in real time, and if I made a mistake, everybody saw it. And it was up to the veteran I was working with to get, and I've been slapped around a couple of times in the ring for screwing up. You know, those are veterans that they come back and they apologize for, you know, doing it, but they said, hey, you can't do that. Especially if you try to do a move they may get hurt on. Oh, that cuffs the crap out of you. But I guarantee you one thing. I mean, not enough to hurt you, but enough to know that they meant business. And they said, hey, you either go learn it or, you know, the next guy won't be as easy on you. So that's how we never really practiced anywhere. We just learned it. And if you practice anywhere, you just go over something in the dressing room with a guy and then go out there and see if you could do it. Which, could you do it? Maybe. Maybe not. That's why we did it. You know, think about stuntmen and wrestlers. Stuntmen, they can have as many takes as they want because they just retape it over and over and over and over. If you're in the wrestling business, you got one take at it, and it's either good or it's not, which leads you to believe how good some of these guys really are, because if you only get one take at it, you don't get a second shot. It's got to be good the first time. So anyway, that's my any questions, John? Anything else you want to ask me?
No, I just wanted to say that I know Lawler has said that the guy he worked first in 82 wasn't as good as Kaufman, so I just wanted to bring that up.
That son of a... Folks, if you don't know what that means, that Lawler's talking about me, then bastard. And I'll tell you, Lawler is probably one of the easiest guys to work. He had great... He didn't have a lot of moves. He didn't need a lot of moves.
Mm-hmm.
Lawler and me too. I'm story oriented. If you tell the story, you don't have to do all that stuff. And of course, the young guys say, "Ah, oh, well, you're just lazy." No, I wasn't lazy, because I've done all those moves before. And people just they say, "If you don't have a story, they'll just look at you." And it's hard because, you know, that's why I really feel for some of these WWE guys working out in front of a crowd. Hey, I worked in a crowd and got the same reaction. I worked in front of some crowds. It could be almost full. You can hear a pin drop. That's one thing about Japan I always noticed. They were never really crazy during the match. They would just sit there, and all of a sudden you could almost hear a pin drop. And then all of a sudden you do a move, and they go, "Wah!" And then they sit down. Then you do something else, "Wah!" But they would just sit there and look at you. But anyway, listen, folks, you can go to my website, DirtyDutchMantel.com, and I actually finished my story on Ricky Morton. Did you read that story, John?
Good stuff. I absolutely love it. I think you probably got Ricky Morton in trouble.
No. I've already written the story. He's already seen it. But that was 4 wives ago. He can't get in trouble.
Oh, okay. Good.
And I asked him. I don't ever write anything about anybody unless I ask them. I said, "Ricky, can I write this down and put it on my website?" He said, "Brother, you can do anything you want." He said, "I don't care," because Ricky don't care. He really don't. He thinks it's funny now. It wasn't too funny then, but he kind of thinks it's funny now. And I asked him, and he knows I did it. So, and I love Ricky to death. And I got a few more stories. So if you like old wrestling stories, go to DirtyDutchMantel.com, join up, subscribe, whatever you do over there, and you can read some of those stories. Don't make any money off of it, but I write the history of some of the wrestling stories I've heard, and I present it to you. You either take it or it don't cost you nothing anyway. DirtyDutchMantel.com, and I'm coming out with some hats. This is what I'm coming out with, John. The University of Dutch Diploma.
Love it.
You can graduate from the University of Dutch Diploma, and I'll have that up on my website probably by this weekend. And if you want, and you can hang it on your wall. It's a nice looking diploma, very nice. And you can get an associate's degree in the wrestling arts, or a PhD in wrestling theology. Hey, you don't get that just anywhere. And since there's no student loans accepted, it's a cheap way to get a college degree. You can go to my Instagram page, which my friend Larry Francis helps me with. And it's actually, I like Instagram because it's mostly pictures anyway. And so all my pictures are mostly historical, I think, especially back in the George Washington days when I show some of those pictures of me and George. But and that is Dirty Dutchman 1 on Instagram. And on Twitter, it's Dirty D Mansell at Twitter, and you can contact me there. Or my Gmail address, DirtyDutchMantel@gmail. So if you got any questions, and that's how I got the questions today, you can write me now. I'll bring it out on the show. So, John, I've enjoyed it. How long has this show been?
What? Over an hour, hour and nine.
Yeah, we're getting longer here, John.
Yeah, you got to love
that. You know, if you'd shut up a little bit, we'd get some good stories out here anyway. So where were we going today? We were going to where?
Charleston, where? South Carolina.
Well, we're about halfway there now.
Mm-hmm.
You've been to Charleston?
Yes.
Beautiful nice. City.
Beautiful place.
You ever been to Savannah?
No.
Never been to Savannah. Beautiful mm-mm. town. Beautiful town. See, I used to go down there before people ever knew about it. So, and what in Charleston and Savannah, their history, need to read up on it. There's a lot of things I started reading up on it when I, and I was aware of Charleston and Savannah for a long time. And I didn't realize all the things about the cities, the towns, until I started reading on it. And there's a lot of history between those two towns. A lot of history. So anyway, hey, get old Bob Dylan ready, because we're about ready to take this thing home. I want every real American, within the sound of my voice, to please rise, put your hand over your heart, and say along with us, we, the people.
The people.
I'll see you next week. John, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, sir.